Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Cory Bory, Babori, Fanana, Fana, Fofori, Fee, Fi, Fofori, Cory.
I think I might have done that before. I'm Cory Knockreiner.
Well done. On today's episode, we got a news roundup for you with four different news topics, ranging from mobile phone attacking attacks. Wow, that did not flow.
Mobile phone hacking attacks.
Too.
I like the hack to hackings.
The world's oldest botnet.
On the phones. Have all the mobile phones with the hackity hack attacks.
Let's jump in. All right, let's start with some news topics today. The first one actually came out a few weeks ago now. It was some research done by a firm called Adaptive Mobile Security, where they published a post about a new vulnerability that they've called SimJacker, that they actually believe has been actively exploited for the last 2 years or so across multiple countries. Now, this is different than like the SimJacking we have talked about several times on this podcast, where you go and convince your T-Mobile rep to port someone's phone number over to a SIM, and then you can basically steal all their SMS messages and their SMS one-time passwords. SimJacker, in this case, is just the name of the vulnerability. Because it uses, it actually abuses the SIM toolkit, or STK, which has instructions for interacting with the SIM card itself. Specifically, they're going after a piece of software on these SIM cards called the SAT browser. That's S, the at symbol, but pronounced SAT. And because of how this vulnerability works, the messages that are sent that to vulnerable devices aren't actually visible within a user's inbox. Basically, the SIM card will intercept these messages and then handle them itself as data messages, is what they call them. Now, the SAT browser is actually legacy software. They noted that it hasn't actually been updated since 2009, but it's still present in many SIM cards today. When it comes to what this vulnerability can do, they've been a little light on the details because they're actually presenting a talk in London in early October.
Virus Bulletin.
At the Virus Bulletin conference. But they give some information. So there's a bunch of different commands they can call using this software on SIM cards through these effectively hidden text messages. Things like set up calls so they can make a phone call. They can force it to send a text message. They can get location information. They can power off the SIM cards like a denial of service attack.
Or just play a playful tone.
Or play a playful tone. That would actually
launch your browser.
Annoy the heck out of me.
Yeah. I don't know enough about these actual SIM card messages to know if they mean a tone from your phone or actually a phone tone. I mean, phones still do use... while they're digital too, but there are tones that are used by phones as well.
Is that the thing that Mitnick used to launch
the previous when we were at the good old fashioned PBX systems? Definitely
the POTS, yeah, the plain POTS, old telephone.
There
system.
You go, POTS, and Captain Crunch definitely used a tone because of his name comes from a Captain Crunch whistle you got from a cereal box that happened to play the perfect tone to do some nastiness on POTS phone system.
Exactly. So this is a bit more advanced than that. Now we're attacking the chips that manage cellular connectivity, basically.
Playing a tone is different than a geographical location request, which sounds like not something you want everyone to be able to do on your phone.
Exactly. And this is actually, like, a lot of people might not think how powerful a SIM card is in your phone. It's basically, it has instruction sets and it can run code, and in this case, intercept messages and perform actions without you even knowing.
Aren't a lot of the over-the-air updates to it has to have some code to allow it to get things that you're not really controlling that might be coming from carriers and
exactly.
stuff?
Exactly. So they mentioned that they believe this has been actively exploited for the last 2 years. Right now, the only details they've said is they believe it's a specific private company that works with governments, and they're using these vulnerabilities to monitor individuals on behalf of these governments. They pointed out a few instances where there were several hundred individual phones targeted by this per day in one specific unnamed country. But long story short, it affects basically any phone using the vulnerable SIM. They mentioned like iPhones and OnePlus and all the most popular phones, basically.
iPhones, they're not hackable.
Kidding. Well, in this case, it might not be the phone itself. It's the SIM card you put inside of it. So their talk, and I assume all the details behind this, comes out in about a week. And so maybe we'll be able to revisit this on a future podcast.
If there's by the way, if you read their blog post, if you're not a nerdy technician that wants to know technically how this works, you have all you need. You have what I call the scope and impact. You know, here's what the bad guy needs to be able to pull off this attack. Here's what they can do with it. Here's what the result would be on your phone. I think for the average IT guy, that's probably enough.
But I'm a nerdy guy and I want to know.
Me too. I mean, if you actually want to know exactly what how they're doing it, it's going to be a pretty cool talk, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll disclose more than just the high level stuff they
have.
You
want to ship me out there so I can go attend the talk?
I know you like going to London.
Unfortunately, I'm not actually going to be there, but like 4 days afterwards.
So
bummer. Let's move on to our next topic now. So Akamai just published a blog post about attackers using a new method of amplification for DDoS attacks. This one abuses the Web Service Dynamic Discovery, or WSD, protocol. I don't know why the second D goes missing in there. But
probably some other acronym that already uses it. I don't know.
Probably, yeah. But they found attacks using this protocol that were peaking at around 35 gigabits per second, which isn't the largest attack by any measure we've seen. But as we'll get to in a second, the amplification rate is actually pretty high for this protocol.
Before we jump in, a lot of you that listen to us know what we mean by amplification attack. But if you don't, when you're trying to DDoS someone, obviously you want to send a lot of traffic. And there's either two ways to do that. Brute force, you actually legitimately own enough servers or own enough bandwidth around the world that you can generate that much traffic, or you need to figure out some sort of asymmetric power, which is how can I get less actual computers to be able to generate a lot more traffic to some victim than they really could generate on their own. An amplification attack is the type of attack where whether it's your own computer doing it or you're tricking a server with a spoofed message to actually send something to your victim, what you have to send in order to trick the victim or trick that server into sending something to the victim, what you send is much, much smaller than the packet that actually goes to the victim.
Some early examples of this are like DNS and NTP, where a DNS or NTP request is pretty small in the number of bytes, but the response can be very, very large. And because they use UDP, which is connectionless as a protocol, you can spoof the source address, like you said.
Yeah, the magic of UDP is the spoofing part.
Yep. And so that way you can blast the massive response at whoever your target is. And if you get it across enough servers, you can have something like those terabit per second attacks we've seen previously.
And by the way, if you're interested in, you know, amplification attacks, the protocol we're talking about is kind of a new one that we're learning about. But there's lots of protocols that support it. The CISA has a published U.S. CERT alert talking about UDP-based attacks. And one of the interesting things in it is a chart of protocols that have been used and their amplification factor, which we'll get into. But I think we did the podcast back when Memcached came out. And previously, Memcached was the big new thing besides being a protocol that I think the general public and even us didn't know could be amplifiable. Its amplification was 10,000 to 51,000 times the packet you would send to a server. So that's a really good amplification. So kind of for comparison, DNS, which is everyone uses DNS amplification, or all the attackers did back in the day.
It's my favorite one.
There you go. Oops, is that why I can't game anymore at home? I'm kidding. 28 to 54 times versus 51,000. So it's quite a big difference for sure. But let's get back to this one. How does this one compare?
So WSD, according to Akamai, the amplification rate is 15,300% of the original byte size, which places it fourth in the DDoS attack leaderboard for highest reflected amplification factor.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, if you can send one byte and get a packet with, and by the way, you won't send a one byte packet, that's impossible. But let's say you could, and you get a 15,300 byte packet in return, that's a pretty good return on investment.
Yep. So where does WSD show up? Well, it's a specification designed for basically discovering other services and devices on the same local area network. They mentioned in their post that it shows up a lot in the IoT space. And the reason it's a problem is because the manufacturers of these devices are not properly implementing the protocol. It's supposed to only respond to multicast connections. So there's a specific IP address that's supposed to be only accessible on the local LAN, and this protocol is only supposed to respond to connections over the correct port to that IP.
By the way, since we were talking about DNS amplification, when I talk about it, there's three things you need. One, you need some sort of amplification factor, which you heard. Second, you need some way to be able to spoof a packet so that you can get someone else to send it to the victim. That was the UDP part that Mark was talking about. But the third thing is you need it to be a network service that's commonly publicly available. And that's why not everything is vulnerable to, because there's lots of protocols that might have amplification, but never are exposed on the internet.
Yep.
And this one really should be one of the latter, is what you're saying. This one should not be widely publicly available, but they made a mistake that basically did that.
Yep, they're saying manufacturers are creating basically IoT devices. I think they listed like cameras as one of the large ones, where they're adding WSD, and then also they've configured it so it responds to unicast addresses, which means just typical IP address-based stuff instead of that multicast one, which means if a user then exposes that to the internet, like port forward stuff to their new shiny camera, anyone on the internet can send a WSD spoofed request to it and then blast a victim with it.
So the good news is there are remediations for this. It's simply a matter of, hopefully you don't use this at all, in my opinion, but maybe if you are doing this, you make sure firewalls are not exposing it to the internet.
Turns out you don't want to port forward all internet traffic to your camera or DVR system.
Out of curiosity, I mean, we both read this together, but is there a port for this just to let the audience
3706,
know?
3706, I thought. Let's find that out together. And while you look that up, I actually have a news update for
that sounds good.
Anyone that has that follows our Secplicity blog, which you probably do if you've read this, or listen to this. You probably saw an article I wrote while...
I read with my AirPods all the time. Thank you, Audiobook.
You probably saw about a week or so ago, I wrote an article on a Monday after being angry from being DDoSed off of World of Warcraft over the weekend.
Yep.
There's a news update on that one. Blizzard, the owner or the developers for that game, announced that very soon after the DDoS attack, they worked with foreign law enforcement officials and they were able to identify and arrest the individual... responsible for the DDoS attacks. This isn't the first time that they've actually successfully found someone that's been DDoSing their games. Apparently, they have good logging and they're able to identify them. So, hoorah! That's what you get for trying to ruin my weekend. So, the port for WSD is...
Wow, there seems to be lots of them.
Oh, man.
But anyways, the main one, TCP UDP 3702, that seems to be the main one. But there's a number of UDP ports that seem to be involved after the fact, including common UDP ports like 139 and 445, which are associated with other protocols we know.
But long story short, don't port forward stuff if you don't have to.
Yeah, definitely not 3702.
Exactly. Definitely not to your camera. Next news topic. So this is research from Symantec, where they recently discovered a group who they are calling Tortoise Shell. I'm not actually sure why.
Would Grape be offended?
Grape would be very offended, yes. Actually, Grape might be a hacker. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe Grape is behind these Saudi attacks.
For the very confused people, Grape is my pet tortoise's name. But anyways, Symantec have discovered that my pet tortoise, who they've called Tortoise Shell, is targeting IT providers in Saudi Arabia. They mentioned that the group has been active since at least July of last year, and since which they've identified 11 different organizations hit by this group. In at least two of the organizations, the attackers appear to have gained domain admin level access. And then using that, they've been installing backdoor tools, collecting information from infected systems, installing additional tools to like scrape Firefox browser data. They've been using PowerShell backdoors. So really, this is continued attacks targeting, in this IT case, Saudi Arabian providers. MSPs. Yeah.
So I found this interesting because you've heard us talk about the MSP attacks happening primarily in the United States lately. Just to refresh your memory, one due to a ConnectWise API plugin flaw way back in January that caused four MSPs to get hijacked, then deliver ransomware to all their customers. There was another MSP attack where three companies had credentials stolen, and then tools like RMM tools like a Webroot central management, which had no vulnerabilities. This wasn't necessarily Webroot's fault, but once you had a privileged credential, you could use the Webroot central management to do bad stuff. Three MSPs were affected, spread ransomware to their customers. And most recently, we found that the Texas ransomware attacks, who involved a service provider, some news has come out, and MSPs were involved there as well. So those were all U.S. related. I don't think these are the same actors, only because if you read the tools, tactics, and procedures, it seems very similar, use of PowerShell and use of IT providers. That's where there's the big similarity. But they're doing enough different that it seems to be a different group. And obviously, they're targeting another geography. But what I think is interesting is this is spreading around the world. And this whole tactic of realizing, whether you call them service providers, system integrators, IT providers, or MSPs and MSSPs, they realize that many businesses nowadays don't necessarily use only their own IT. They outsource it to some provider. And if you can get that provider, not only can you infect businesses, but you get a big return for just one breach because you get all of the organizations they might support.
Which means MSPs really have to focus hard on security now because they are becoming targeted.
Now, the good news is MSPs are usually better at it. I mean, they realize this. They understand that they're taking control of your network and they do their best to implement it. But they have to be on their game. They are now being targeted. Attackers are, frankly, if you think about it from a bad guy perspective, it is a smart tactic to go after these providers. But as you said, Mark, they definitely have to up their game.
Exactly. So if you are an MSP, make sure that you are doing at least at a minimum phishing awareness training, because a lot of the times that's how they get the credentials out. Make sure you have your own technical protections in place.
Although, speaking of credentials, to me, the number one thing all MSPs need to do is all of us security people say you should use multi-factor. Now, let's talk reality here. Multi-factor, even if you have easy solutions, and by the way, there are very easy solutions that are simple for even normal users to use. But the general consensus is whenever you talk about monthly factors, people don't like extra steps. So it's all about a usability situation. But multi-factor is the solution. I mean, besides spear phishing training, who cares if you lost the credential if you're using multi-factor? So I get why small businesses sometimes think it's too hard. It's not, by the way. You can do it. You can do it through some of these providers. But I get why you might think it's too hard and you have to get used to it. Once you get used to it, it's easy and we have to do it. But MSPs, you absolutely have to do it because you are the keys to many kingdoms. Most importantly, let's say you even think multi-factor's hard, which I would immediately disagree with. But your privileged users, sure, maybe you don't want to push it to all your employees, although you should. It's actually cheap and inexpensive to do now. But even if you don't have argument against all the employees, anyone with an admin credential absolutely has to be. And it's doubly no excuse for someone that takes care of other people because, you know, they have a lot of power and a lot of control.
Exactly. Use multi-factor right now. Immediately.
Yeah. By the way, as someone, we do use multi-factor now, both of us. I definitely have it on my password manager. But we kind of get it, right? You know, we've been talking about how important multi-factor was 10 years ago, but it was much harder sometimes to implement. It was different for different systems, different on different platforms. But look at it again. It's got much more simple. It doesn't require hardware. It doesn't require you typing even numbers half the time. So look at modern multi-factor. The biggest thing that's happened in multi-factor over the past decade, besides becoming inexpensive for SMBs, is the fact that they've really worked on the usability problem. It's getting much and much more frictionless.
And the famous words of Blizzard during their Diablo Immortal launch, "Y'all have cell phones, right?" Anyways, Let's move on to our final news topic now. One where
we don't want to freaking play Warcraft on cell phones, Blizzard.
Sorry, I couldn't hold it in.
Diablo, in this case.
Oh, sorry, Diablo. but still the same.
This news topic, Corey.
Just tell Bethesda that too, by the way. Your wonderful new Morrowind Skyrim game on phones.
You joke.
I was so excited for Blade. Ugh.
Yeah.
Give me back my Skyrim on PC, please.
I will say Skyrim on the Amazon Alexa was a fun waste of time.
Oh, that was cool. That was a cool little fun thing. I agree with that.
Yep.
But Blade sucks. Sorry.
Yes, it does. this last news topic, Corey rolled his eyes pretty dang hard when I brought it up as something I wanted to chat about because I think he is sick of talking about it.
It's important. It's important. The same as ransomware, right? We have to still talk about ransomware, unfortunately. We just mentioned it a second ago. But there's some things that have been so common for so long, we get bored of them.
Ransomware, Facebook privacy breaches.
Or,
in this case, Emotet.
If you haven't heard of that, by the way, it's advertised as the most destructive botnet. It's a botnet that's been around forever and ever.
Yep.
I'm being a little hyper. I'm using hyperbole. I'm not being hyperbolic.
Corey has the best words. The reason we're bringing this up, though, is Malwarebytes just released a report last week that the Emotet botnet appears to be resurging after taking several months off. And among other things, so this we already mentioned, it's a pretty long-lived banking Trojan, basically. But one of the big things it does is it'll steal contact lists from infected victims and then use that to create rather convincing phishing emails to then try and find additional victims. It'll use like their name in the subject line, which is a pretty easy spear phishing style attack that makes it a bit more believable. And then they attach a malicious Word document with macros enabled to try and trick that victim into infecting themselves with Emotet. The Word doc, when you open it up, it says you have to accept a license agreement. And in order to do that, you have to enable content and enable editing, which is how they trick you into getting to run macros. Hopefully by now, people are getting better at recognizing you should probably look at that big yellow security warning when there's a macro-enabled document.
Next.
Exactly. Once the malware installs on your system, it can actually turn around and install additional malware too. They mentioned they saw it installing TrickBot, which is another banking Trojan that man-in-the-middle's web sessions. They also saw it installing a few different ransomware strains as well.
It's pretty typical, by the way. To me, the botnet is just the Swiss Army knife of malware. You know, it's made just to have this long-living backdoor with a command and control to lots of people, and then it becomes a source of child payloads. They can do whatever they want. They load different modules. If they want to steal software keys from your computer one day, they can do that. If they want to grab your credentials or your users, they can do that.
We've seen them using cryptojackers now pretty often now.
And they resell this on the dark web, right? The reason it might be installing other things like TrickBot or ransomware is once they've infected 100,000 or 1 million users, they then go and say, hey, do you want to run out a botnet to DDoS or do you want to have your malware installed on 100,000 computers so that you can control them? And they just use their botnet to deliver it. It's also not interesting or not uncommon to see the botnet exist for a decade because it really is shared and traded on the underground. Sometimes the source code for these botnets leak. Once they leak, you'll see like Citadel. Some of these botnets have existed for multiple decades. They might have started as a RBot or ZBot variant, this big Visual Studio, Visual Basic package with modules. But over time, as they leak, other people start with that leaked botnet. They add their new modules. Eventually, 10 years later, it looks slightly different and does slightly
Visual
different
Basic,
things.
That must be a really old
ZBot. It was very old. But ZBot continued to morph for 20 years, and a lot of the new botnets you've seen and a lot of the actual function libraries and stuff is just reusing and reusing.
I think that's like if the you first have language a I ever learned.
Command and code or command and control channel, just some of the basic, just like Windows functions. If you have a function to open a window and click a thing, why would you rewrite that? Just keep using the same code. So it's not uncommon to see, even though maybe the original Emotet author is in jail or is left or got a job in security. Got held at Black Hat. And, by the way, he didn't write Emotet. But so no matter where he is, it could still exist in new variants as the underground keeps on changing it. Yep. Sorry, Marcus. We feel for you. I'm glad you get to go home soon.
Yeah, he is actually home right now, Mr. Marcus Hutchins.
But he did not write a botnet, but he did write malware. It wasn't a botnet, was it?
It was a Trojan.
Maybe it was.
Yep. But anyways, he was sentenced to time served, so he's back home. Unfortunately, he will probably never, ever be able to attend another Black Hat, which sucks.
For the near future, he's stuck outside of America. Are you United States?
When it comes to Emotet, though, I mean, we have signatures out the wazoo for it.
Yeah.
And our other layers of anti-malware.
The other layers are important. I mean, part of what you might be getting here is the variant Emotet has probably millions of variants, whether they're just repacked versions of the same variant, or, I mean, you'll see for botnets, they're botnet families. And they're a family because not only do they have repacking and encrypting to cause many, many variants, but they have different families where someone's modified them and there's different actors maybe using the same botnet code. So yes, we do actually have signatures even for the latest ones, but when you have variants as often as botnets, you really care more about our more proactive services like intelligent AV and APT blocker.
Yep.
Machine learning, by the way, and behavioral analysis. We can catch new malware without having to actually have a signature for it.
So make sure you have those turned on so Corey doesn't roll his eyes at you if you get infected by a decade-old botnet.
Yeah, I'm getting sick of asking, did you have total security?
And not only did you have it, did you turn it on?
Yeah, that is absolutely the more important question. Actually, a lot of our partners and customers are good at buying it, but you got to actually use it.
Exactly. That's a good note to end on. Make sure you enable these security services that you have purchased and signed up for.
Don't be like me and buy 5 board games on Amazon and still have all of them in the shrink wrap. Play those suckers with your friends.
When's our next Gloomhaven session?
I was going to make that joke. You got there first. Unfortunately, October is going to kill us. We have to do it soon.
Someday. That's another good way to end the podcast. Go play
Gloomhaven. It's a great game. You'll love it.
It is
a 96 campaign, so you'll be playing for 5 years. But
man, with that, let's go ahead and end. To go
Cheers.
Play Gloomhaven. Hopefully.
Yes. Break out the beer.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept.
Come on, I want the tweets too. It's SecAdept, in case you're wondering.
SecAdept. And both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week with a special podcast day edition of the 443.
You realize we say we see them every week, and I don't think we've ever seen them once.
That's what the Trojan installer is for on the MP3
file.
Oh,
yeah. I forgot about our webcam botnet. We need to send more of those emails telling them about the browsing habits they've had while we had their webcam
Subscribe
on.
Subscribe or else.